Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world is to come and don't you see?
Good evening and welcome. It's Progressive News Network once again. Boy, we have got such a jam-packed show tonight. We've got some real incredible people. We got Trish Sheldon. We got Kit Rafferty. We got Ed Wujek, Luis Cuevas, Amy Tidd, James Schmidt, Emine Delik. And it's just unbelievable. We've got some real, really important progressive information for you tonight. So without any further ado, I want to get right into it. I want to play this little clip when Alan Grayson was basically being harassed by P.J. O'Rourke, a comedian, about the Occupy movement. And let me just give you this little clip from Grayson. It really tells it all.
Okay. Well, take your shoes off, get a bongo drum, forget where to go to the bathroom, and it's yours.
Listen, if I am a spokesman for all the people who think that we should not have 24 million people in this country who can't find a full-time job, that we should not have 50 million people in this country who can't see a doctor when they're sick, that we shouldn't have 47 million people in this country who need government help in order to feed themselves, and we shouldn't have 15 million families who owe more on their mortgage than the value of their home, okay, I'll be that spokesman.
Grayson really told him. And listen, I want to bring in Trish Sheldon. Today was GM Foods Day across the country, and there was a big event down in Hollywood. Let me give you what Trish had to say about GM Foods, our GM specialist.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Trish Sheldon, our GMO expert. Trish, take it away.
Hi, Rick. Happy non-GMO month.
Happy non-GMO month to you too, Trish. Trish,
Yep. There's
a lot going on. Tell us what we need to know today.
Yes, we have some new developments, which is great. We have 270,000 farmers united to sue Monsanto. This is the Organic Seed Growers and Trade Association, and they're uniting. I think it's wonderful.
Oh, that's great. Go ahead, tell us more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, recently, the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, has approved the unregulated planting of GE alfalfa. So what this means is, you know, that's paving the way for GE sugar beets as well. And the question here is, if we're allowing this GMO alfalfa, you know, our pollinators will carry the pollen, and this could potentially cross-contaminate all of our organic dairy crops. So it's not so good. For example, paving the way for GE sugar beets to be planted as well. As you know, we have sugar beets as one of our GE crops as well. Recently, Mr. Vilsack has been quoted as saying, America needs to get with the program and get with the new food. And remember, he comes from Monsanto.
We know where his synthetic butter is breaded, right?
Right, exactly. And we have our new food safety czar for the FDA, Michael Taylor, also, you know, appointed from Monsanto.
I'm shocked.
Exactly. And, you know, he's all over raids with our raw dairy farms. Our raw dairy is not pasteurized. It's full of nutrients. You know, for those that drink dairy, raw is a much healthier version of dairy. You know, unfortunately, he's too busy out there with armed raids on our raw dairy farms to notice that Cargill has 3,600,000 pounds of tainted turkey meat with salmonella, and you think they come in and raid them, you know? E. coli and Tyson beef factories. So, and something comes to mind here. When we are doing the genetic modification process, part of what we use is E. coli and salmonella. We splice that into the seeds as an active ingredient. Is it uncanny that in the last 10 years, we've had more cases and more outbreaks and death and sickness from E. coli and from salmonella? It's interesting.
This is it's a no GMO month. Why don't you tell us a little bit more?
Absolutely. We are hosting the Rally for the Right to Know, which is nationwide. We have over 100 participants. And what we'd like to say is, you know, let's get these foods labeled. Okay, if we can't ban them at this point, hopefully soon, but if not, let's label them so that at least we know what we're eating. So we have, in Florida alone, we have about 6 rallies happening, which is great. Last year, we had maybe 1 or 2. So a lot of people are waking up.
Do you have that information handy where they are in Florida so we can let our audience know?
Absolutely. This is Sunday, World Food Day, October 16th from 12 to 3 p.m. This is the Yellow Green Farmers Market in Hollywood, Florida. And we'll have educational speakers, local musicians, including my band, children's activities, organic food samples, and a puppet show from Food Not Bombs. And we'll be broadcasting from the Robert Scott Bell Show. So
well,
it should be really interesting.
You said there's some other sites in Florida as well. Do you know what any of those other ones are?
Yes. In order to get involved, number one, we're one of our sites is GMO Free Florida, and we're pushing to the labeling initiative. We won't have time to get it on the ballot for 2012, but hopefully, you know, the next round. And then there's also Millions Against Monsanto Florida chapter, also Millions Against Monsanto from the Organic Consumer Association.
Cool. So if they go to that website, they can find out where there might be a rally close to them.
Absolutely, yes. Rally in Tampa, Ocala, Hollywood, Florida. Those are the ones I know of offhand. And those sites are on Facebook, GMO Free Florida and Millions Against Monsanto Florida chapter. And, you know, as well, there's a couple of petitions out there. The Center for Food Safety, there is fooddemocracy.now, and there is Dennis Kucinich has a GE Food Safety Act, and also a Right to Know Act, which is H.R. 6636, because, you know, we have a right to know what's in our food, what's being spliced into our food supply, and 30 countries ban or label GMO food, so why don't we?
Well, probably because they don't want people to know, therefore they can't choose with their marketing dollar.
Exactly right.
Unfortunately. So ignorance, in their opinion, is a strength.
Absolutely.
Isn't that funny, huh? Well, you know, you do mention something that does intrigue me. I understand that your band is not just appearing there, but you have a new recording out. Is that true?
We do, and it's hopefully we'll line up and we'll have it ready on the day. If not, I'm hand printing, hand signing, hand burning, and we'll have a table there for our band, Blue Sky Drive, as well. Vesper Sparrow, we'll have Hunter Altschul, and Rafa from Rafa and Rainer.
So can they get your recording on CD Baby eventually?
Eventually, it will be on CD Baby. We're working on the web pages now.
Excellent.
And we're very excited.
So the name of your band again is Blue Sky Drive?
Yes.
Fantastic. So make note of that, folks. Blue Sky Drive. This is one talented individual, not just a brain, but a talent as well. So about this weekend's event, I guess there'll be petitions there and other information?
Yes, we will have some petitions, and which, you know, you remind me. I remember when President Obama was, you know, just before the presidency, he stated he would make sure foods were, genetically modified foods were labeled. And now, back to earlier, now he's appointed all these heads from Monsanto into the EPA, the FDA, and USDA. And I know we've talked about that before.
That must be an oversight, don't you think?
Just a little.
Maybe deep down, he really cared, maybe.
Maybe, you know, I don't know. I know we care, and then this, no one's asked us if we want to eat these foods. So it'd be nice.
I suppose this is really only important if you eat food or maybe have children, right?
If you're an eater.
Yeah.
So please get active. There's the Institute of Responsible Technology. There's Food and Water Watch. There's GM Watch. There's the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. There's the Center for Food Safety and the Non-GMO Project Shopping Guide. That's a really great guide to show. If it has the stamp, non-GMO, it's had the wand, you know, it's approved non-genetically modified foods in there. And as you know, the foods that are perpetrators are subsidy crops, are commodity crops. Corn, wheat, soy, canola oil, cottonseed oil, cotton, concerned.
So not only are they poisoning us, but they're poisoning us with their own tax dollars.
Exactly. And then Monsanto's making a profit off it from our poor farmers. And when these crops fail, and they have been, especially of late, I've mentioned Don Huber's warning before where these glyphosate crops with this BT toxin are just failing. And now they're finding this BT toxin in the blood of fetuses and pregnant women. So it's everywhere. And, yeah, we have a right to know. We need these foods labeled. Absolutely. And in Europe, they banned these foods, or sorry, they as a commercial crop on the market, they don't allow for GMO foods. However, in animal feed, they allow it. But the reason why is because everyone came out into the streets. They got active, and they said, no way, we are not going to have this food. And sure enough, that's all it took for the government to apply strict labeling laws. And, for example, Kraft may, or Frito-Lay, perhaps, may have a GMO ingredient here in our country, but the same standards don't apply for Europe because they won't have it. So more of us need to stand up for this and speak out and say we are not going to take this food that you're force-feeding us, you know, in addition to petitioning and all. And if we don't buy these foods, the industrial, farmed, processed, packaged food, if we don't support them, they're going to have to change. Already our cereal companies are thinking, whoa, what's going on? People aren't buying as much cereal. You know, they'll catch a clue.
Well, Trish, thank you so much. You are always a font of really important information. And I also have to personally say, best of luck with the new recording.
So much. Rally for the Right to Know on World Food Day, October 16th.
Well, that was Trish Sheldon of Blue Sky Drive, also our GM foods expert. We should be having our next guest on in just a minute, but I'm going to go ahead and do a couple stories of local interest. Number one, I don't know if you caught this, but our illustrious Governor Scott, who so narrowly missed indictment, announced that we don't need anthropologists in Florida. And in fact, this was part of a larger point that Florida students would have an easier time finding jobs and helped fill his campaign promise if they studied science and technology, engineering and math. And in a move that universities will oppose, Scott wants to move state money from liberal arts programs to other degrees. He said it'll give students a better chance to find work. So, God forbid, if you were a musician or an artist or an English major, my God, the governor doesn't really want to see that money spent. He says, we're spending a lot of money on education. You look at the results, and they're just not great. A lot of kids are dropping out of school. They're getting degrees where there's no job. He said, I got accused of not liking anthropology in the paper the other day, but let's think about it. How many more jobs do you think there are for anthropology in this state? You wouldn't want to use your tax dollars to educate more people that can't get jobs in anthropology. Well, amazingly enough, you probably won't be surprised. Anthropologists had something to say back. Let's see, AAA President Virginia Dominguez and Director William E. Davies of the Florida Anthropology Association said, perhaps you're unaware that anthropologists are leading in our nation's top science fields, making groundbreaking discoveries in areas as varied as public health, human genetics, legal history, bilingualism, African-American heritage, and infant learning, the pair wrote. We look forward to meeting with you to share anthropology's contribution to scientific advancement, the economy, and the well-being of your state. The University of Florida Anthropology Department chairwoman, Susan DeFrance, told the Gainesville Sun that she was shocked by Scott's comments. On the Gulf restoration front, last year's BP spill in the Gulf was the worst environmental disaster in this nation's history. The Gulf's health has deteriorated for decades. The restoration plans the Obama administration and the Gulf states put forward this month marks an opportunity to begin reversing ecological and economic damage to a vital national ecosystem. The president established a Gulf Restoration Task Force last fall in the aftermath of the BP disaster. Now, the recommendations aren't altogether new. The plan calls for working in the upper Mississippi watershed to curb agricultural and urban runoff. It would protect coastal areas and wetlands, which are essential to marine habitat, by putting restoration on an equal footing with navigation and flood control. The plan, first of its kind, to integrate restoration efforts by federal, state, and local authorities, is the only way to push a broad agenda that ranges from improving water quality and health of marine resources to protecting against coastal erosion and the effects of climate change. More importantly, the task force has reminded the nation that BP is not solely responsible for the modern state of the Gulf. While most of the repair work will depend on collecting spill-related fines from BP and on Congress directing money to the Gulf, it's essential for the Gulf economy as well as the Gulf ecosystem. Also, coming up next week, there is a wonderful organization called Awake the State pulling together a caucus meeting, and let's have Ray Siemens tell us a little bit about that. Let me bring you Ray. Let's see here. We have Ray Siemens on Awake the State. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Ray Siemens, who's going to talk about the Awake the State conference.
Well, thanks for having me, Rick. For those of you who are familiar, you'll probably recall that on the opening day of Florida's legislative session this year, which was March 8th, we had the first Awake the State March 8th protest and a series of rallies between 30 and 40 locations around the state, everywhere from Pensacola to Key West to Lakeland to Ocala to McClenny, and of course the big cities, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, and dozens more. And we had over 15,000 people show up that day, amazingly, for a mobilization that roughly took place between 3 weeks beforehand. And, you know, originally, you know, we were going to do the rallies and be done. But that didn't happen. As soon as the rallies were over, because they were such a big success and people had never seen crowds that big in their communities up to that time, Rally for a Progressive Cause, rally against the proposed budget cuts and Governor Scott's anti-middle class agenda. There were many people in these different communities who decided, you know, we want to continue the Awake the State movement. We want to continue working sort of across the progressive community, because that was one of the really amazing things we saw. Is we saw firefighters and teachers and nurses, union members and non-union members and environmentalists and pro-choice folks and women's groups. And students and seniors and everybody in between really worked together in a way that we haven't ever seen in Florida before. And they wanted to naturally, I think, continue that. So over the last 6 months, we've been seeing Awake the State networks pop up in counties throughout the state. So you have entities like Awake Pinellas in Pinellas County, where St. Petersburg is located, Awake Tampa, and Awake Broward, Awake Miami, Awake Jacksonville, even Awake Marion, where I live in little Ocala. So what we're now doing is, because we have this wonderful problem now, where we have all these local networks developing and new networks potentially coming online in the coming months, we decided that we wanted to have an Awake the State Summit. We wanted to bring folks together for a weekend of training and community building so that we could go back to our community sort of with a common sense of purpose, a mostly common agenda, and so that we could sort of really consolidate and build the Awake the State movement. So next weekend, October 22nd through 23rd, we will have the Awake the State Summit. As I said, it's going to be 2 days. Starts before Saturday the 22nd. On that day, that is for the most part the Awake the State Summit itself. That will include trainings on how to best build a coalition in your community, which is what these Awake the State networks are. You know, how to engage the media and how to use social media and new media to sort of recruit and build your network. Other organizing tactics. And also we'll have a session where people in their individual communities can actually break out and plan what they want to do. Although I will say that some networks are already ahead of the ball and they're already doing planning even before the summit, so that's also a nice thing to have. But on the second day of the summit, which is Sunday, October 23rd, that will be a program called LegiCamp 2012. We had the first LegiCamp earlier this year in February, and for your listeners who aren't familiar with that, as I'm sure most aren't, LegiCamp is sort of an unconference where people come together and actually form their own agenda, their own session. People vote with their feet based on whether they're interested in something or not. And LegiCamp, of course, as the name implies, revolves around the Florida legislative session. It's an opportunity for people across the progressive movement Florida to come together, share ideas, share their concerns, and also develop projects. That's really the main aim of it. Yes, we want to educate people about the issue and issues and the problems we're going to face in the 2012 legislative session. What we're most interested in, beyond just educating folks, is also using that as an opportunity for collaboration and building projects that folks can take back to their communities and implement over the next few months, and also build a greater sense of community among the progressive community in Florida. So just to sort of recap, Saturday, October 22nd is the summit with training and community building there, and then on Sunday is LegiCamp 2012, which is an opportunity to sort of collaborate and come up with new ideas and strategies and projects to deal with the upcoming legislative session in 2012, which begins on January 5th. So yeah, that's what we're planning on doing. If you're interested in coming, just go to summit.awakethestate.com and you can register there. It's $35 per person. It's a bargain. We're giving you donuts and coffee both days, as well as lunch both days. You just got to come up with, of course, a place to stay and dinner. So I do encourage folks to come on down. Again, that's summit.awakethestate.com. This will be in Orlando at the University of Central Florida.
Thank you so much, Ray. We'll see you there.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rick.
Okay. Well, there you have it, Awake the State, next week, the 22nd and 23rd. Definitely, if you're a progressive activist and you want to help out on getting this state in the direction it wants to go, then let's definitely see you there. We'll be there from Progressive News Network. I also want to mention that some of our friends out there have some wonderful shows you should definitely be tuning into. One of our guests tonight, Emine Dilik, has a wonderful show on international women's rights. She is a columnist, writer, and webcaster. You definitely want to look at her show. It's something you should definitely be listening to. Also want to mention another friend of ours, Gwen Berry, has a show called Here Be Monsters. She's been broadcasting every day during the occupation and making sure that you know what's the latest news from Occupy Wall Street. And then also, of course, our good friend Amy Tidd with the Amy Tidd Show. Amy Tidd's show is Saturday morning at 9, and she'll give us some more details on that. Gwen's show is Sunday evenings from 6 to 7, leads you right into this show, so make sure you check those out. I also want to mention that these shows are brought to you through the cooperation of our sponsors, Imagineering Productions, a full-service multimedia and web marketing company, and the Media Goddess Worldwide. Well, we've got our next guest in. It looks like the charming and talented Ed Wujek, direct from October 2011. Ed, welcome.
Hello, Rick. Thank you very much for inviting me back on the show.
Well, Ed, we had you up here to talk to us about your plans to go up to October 2011. Now you can give us your report, sir. Tell us about it.
Well, for me, I found it a life-changing experience.
Wow.
I have never gone to a big national event like that. And I was up there for 9 days, and it was as you and I spoke on the phone a few days ago, and I told you a little bit about it. The morning of October 6th, which was the day the event started, it was a week ago Thursday, on a plaza in Washington D.C., assembled several thousand people. I have no idea how many. But it was a lot of people. And they were people from all over the country. A lot of people from the West Coast, a lot of people from New England, a lot of people from everywhere. A lot of them were people sort of, let's say, our age, an older crowd, although there was a lot of young people too. And the what made it so extraordinary for me was that assembled on this plaza were people who had come from everywhere with sufficient energy and passion so that they would come all the way across the country to try to effect change. So it was just powerful. It was just hugely powerful just to simply be there in the company of this community, this voluntary community that had sprung up for a specific reason, which is to improve our country, to try to redirect the country. It was quite a spectacular experience. So anyway, what was fun about it was that everyone was there for the same reason. We all understand that it's kind of there's one struggle going on. There are many manifestations of it, but it's really basically us against them, if I could put it simply. It was an activist crowd. People came there to participate in actions. There were typically one or two actions a day. I mean, it was like buses. If you miss the demonstration, wait around. There'll be another one in a couple of hours, you know. As a group, we visited the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and delivered some job applications. We visited a company called General Atomics. Is that a scary name or what?
Yep.
General Atomics is one of the prime contractors on the drones. And so there were some drone models that people put together, and the people in the building where General Atomics was had no idea that this was going on there. And they don't make them there, but it's like their corporate and lobbying office. So we just want to call attention to this stuff. People went to the Air and Space Museum. There were a few arrests there. We went to the White House. The Veterans for Peace wanted to get a little quality time with the president. So they proposed a beer summit with the president. So we went to the White House and delivered along with the Veterans for Peace, we delivered a request to have a beer summit. We said we would even bring the beer. But that was, we didn't get much response on that, but we did bring a lot of people. We got a lot of media attention. We were disruptive, which is the whole idea. One of the organizers of this thing, a fellow named Tarek Kauf, who's with Veterans for Peace, he made what I consider to be a wonderful observation. He said that we really have to thank Barack Obama. And what we have to thank him for is proving, without a doubt, that the institutional Democratic Party, as currently organized, cannot and will not ever be a force for progressive change. I mean, as Sarah Palin talked about all that hopey, changey stuff, and of course her agenda is somewhat different, but when it's taken almost 3 years for the American people to realize that the promised change hasn't happened and ain't happening.
And Ed, I don't know if you saw the headline today, but there's a story in Fire Dog Lake that Tim Geithner says, well, if you're waiting for indictments on Wall Street, stick around because they're coming.
Well, cool. That's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
That they're waiting for 2016 or 17 to maybe bring that one out.
Yeah, right. I guess, and I mean, the point about that comment is that not that Barack Obama is an evil man,
no,
or that everyone in Congress is bought and sold, although most of them are, but particularly, and I do want to exclude the House Progressive Caucus, which has a lot of really excellent people in it.
Absolutely,
but for all intents and purposes, what we've learned, what the American people have learned, and what those of us in the activist industrial community have learned, is that if we want change, we got to do it ourselves. This is the message that's coming from Occupy Wall Street. It's the same message that's coming from all the Occupy actions. Everyone realizes, hey, if we want it, we got to go out and get it. And so I guess in coming back from Washington, my message, or I consider my job, is to continue that spirit. I support all the Occupy actions. I want to continue to be a disruptive influence, I guess, is the best way I can put it. From the needless to say, in Washington, there were some really wonderful protest signs. And one of them I particularly found meaningful was a sign that said, "Our biggest problem is that we're ignoring our problems," which is extremely true. And then my actual favorite one is, "You have the right to remain silent, but I don't recommend it." And the point is, people, we can't remain silent. It's unless we go out and do it, it ain't going to get done. We cannot depend on the Congress. We cannot depend on the federal government. We cannot depend on the state government. We can't depend on anybody, because the institutions are corrupted, and we got to go do it ourselves. And so I'm not even talking only about, you know, traditional activists. I think that consciousness is starting to permeate the whole country. And this is what we're seeing with the Occupy actions. We're seeing people more and more saying, we got to do something, because those guys aren't doing it.
You're absolutely right.
And that is really the lesson that I brought back from D.C., is that if you want change, you got to go out and, you know, make some trouble, make some noise, get some attention, get some media, talk to people, wear a funny hat, do whatever you got to do, but go out and make trouble and make a revolution.
Well, thank you so much, Ed.
And so thank you very much for having me on the show. And
I appreciate your report, and I appreciate you standing there for me, because I couldn't go to D.C. this time. And thank you again, my brother.
Yeah, I did consider myself kind of a representative of all those who couldn't come, and so that made it even sweeter. Okay.
Thanks again, buddy. You have a good night.
Take care, Rick. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
We've got our next guest here. Who's this?
Are you talking to me?
I am talking to you. Is this Kit?
No, it's actually Gwen. I'm a little early.
Hello, Gwen. Welcome.
Hi. It's nice to hear your voice.
Well, you know,
I have to say I agree with everything Ed was saying. He really put a wonderful exclamation point to what's going on. And it's nice to hear a report from D.C. with the October 12th group. 2011.
Well, you know,
we're in so many groups lately that.
That's right. That's right. Well, Gwen, this is going to be a round robin, so let me bring on two more guests who just called in, okay?
Certainly.
Good evening and welcome. Who's this?
Hello, Rick. This is Louise.
Ah, Louise. Welcome, sir. Welcome. I've got Gwen on there, and I've got one more guest to bring in. We're going to do kind of a round-robin discussion, so hold on 1 second. Let me bring in this person. Good evening. Who's this? Is this Amy?
This is Jimmy Schmidt calling from Gainesville,
Florida. Oh, Mr. Smith, welcome, sir. Welcome. So we've got Gwen, we've got Louise, and we've got Jimmy. I'd like to welcome you all for this round-robin discussion of media. I'm going to throw this one out first. I know that we've all noticed that while Occupy was off the media radar for a couple of weeks, suddenly it's all over the place. What's your thoughts on that? Let me ask you, Gwen, first. Go ahead.
Well, I think that really you have to be honest with corporate media or MSM. If it bleeds, it leads. And there's been some brutality with the New York police and even a few other cities around the country. I think that brought awareness up, but I think that the overall, let's call it the goodness factor, is seeping in. And I think that the media that you and I provide, the people's media, is making its way into a more main or a larger audience.
Thanks, Gwen. Luis, let me get your thoughts, sir. How does it sound to you up in the northern part of Florida?
Yeah, I think that I agree with Gwen. That's the when it comes to the media, the big thing is money first, and the way to get money is to have a spectacle. And unless you have a story with a spectacle, you're not going to get audience. So what they do is that they look out for particularly the crisis moment, and that is when the police come in and they start knocking some heads and bashing some skulls and they throw in the horses. Well, that is the circus, and that's what they like to bring in at that point. So the story itself is thrown to the background, and they push all these things forward, and you can see that in many of the headlines throughout the entire system. As you go, I was looking early this morning, and one after the other, it was impressive. Yes, thousands there, but there were so many arrests. That was a key point, saying that somebody stepped off the line and was arrested. Boom, they came in on that one. What the issue was, what the real talking points were, they didn't focus on that.
Yeah. Jimmy, let me ask you the same question, sir. From your position, what's your take on this sudden discovery of Occupy?
Well, I want to say first that our local media here in the Gainesville area is doing a better job than the national media of actually talking about the issues. And,
Well, that's great.
You know, they're participating to some extent in the echo chamber of, well, these people don't have a coherent message and a coherent set of demands. But and it's interesting, I think, at the national level, the points are getting across despite the corporate media's agenda of repeating the echo about a lack of a coherent message and a coherent set of demands. Let me read you something from the New York Times real quick.
Go ahead.
Let's see. Some onlookers, among them members of the 1% who work in the area, they're talking about Zuccotti Park, are asking, who are these people and what exactly do they want? A visit to Lower Manhattan shows that their answers, although reflecting a general unhappiness with the status quo, are by no means similar. Now, the ironic thing about that line right there is a caption that goes with a series of photographs that each has its own subcaption. And the pictures of the people and the captions under them and the signs they're holding in their photographs portray a very coherent message and a very coherent set of demands. So I almost feel like an editor at the time felt it necessary to insert the echo chamber line about a lack of coherence,
to throw people off a bit. Right. I was watching C-SPAN this morning, and it was wonderful and surprising to me how many people who signed on as Republicans, who signed on as conservatives, who had that sort of Southern twang in their voice, we're saying, you know, we may be two baggers, we may be Republicans, but these people make sense. But yet, at the same time, what C-SPAN was doing with their visual, they kept showing cuts of the firebombs and the riots in Europe where there was danger, where there was disaster, where there was damage. And they just kept showing those visuals while the voice, the narrative, was completely different.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah, that's a classic.
You have to hand it to Amy Goodman at Democracy Now.
Yep.
She and Keith Olbermann are bringing the truth up. Current television and Democracy Now! Are being elevated through this whole phenomenon, or movement, sorry.
Yep. Well, you know, I just can't say enough how wonderful it is to see how this awareness, this awakening has just blossomed across the country. It has gotten too big. They cannot ignore it anymore.
Yeah, it's, I really liked what Ed had to say earlier about disruption. You know, that's what we have to do. We have to take direct action, and we have to disrupt, because business as usual just can't stand anymore. The rich have recovered from the recession, and working folks are in a depression, from my perspective.
Sure.
And that's what I'm hearing. You know, yesterday we had a great event here in Gainesville, by the that was put on by the local occupation and some of the unions, including the person that kind of spearheaded it was an organizer for the University of Florida Faculty Union, and it was called the 99% Speak Out.
You know,
and it was just a bunch of ordinary folks getting up on the steps of City Hall and addressing a crowd of their fellow working folks and talking about the reality of the situation. And something that occurred to me in thinking about that is that one thing that we've really got to push back with through our progressive media and especially face-to-face and word-of-mouth on the street when we're at our local demonstrations is, you know, one of the criticisms that I'm hearing from the left and the right of the occupation movement is, oh, they're just portraying themselves as victims and they're just jealous of the rich. And the line I think we need to push back with is, no, we're not victims, we're rebels. You know, we've taken enough, we're not going to take it anymore. We're like the guy in the what was the 70s movie about the media? I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right.
Yeah,
Gwen, let me ask you this. You've been doing a regular show on Occupy. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? What kind of reactions, what kind of voices are you hearing?
Well, believe it or not, I'm getting callers from New York because I have a friend base up there, but also it's through my blog buddies with Roundtree 7. Yet, locally now, we have a group. We met yesterday here in Occupy Lake Worth, which has become Occupy Palm Beach County. Our next meeting will be on Clematis, at the base of Clematis by the fountain, on Saturday next. And I think this group down here is finding a organizational cohesion using the standard of the Occupy Wall Street General Assembly and consensus. People are learning it. We have older folks here that are the majority of the crowd, but there is a young contingency and a midlife contingency here in Lake Worth that is very progressive and very activist, that has stepped in and is doing a lot with it. The Everyday Show, I have some days where it seems very shallow in the streets and other days when I'm just getting lots of people calling and commenting. It's about boycotting the MSM and giving us, the people's media, if you will, the support and solidarity with Occupy Wall Street. That's why we're doing it. You know, we can only do 2 hours a day. We try to do that much.
Luis, let me ask you, sir. You've got feelers out and people you're in contact with across the state. What kind of feedback
Yes.
are you hearing?
I'm getting a lot of vibes from a number of people, and one of the things is, looking forward into what's next. And, you know, when do we go from the expression of all the grievances that we have to institutional change? Because that's really what matters. That's where it comes in. That's where you got to come to the nitty-gritty. And essentially is, how do we go without co-opting this revolutionary movement, if you will, because some of the parties want to do that. We want to think in terms of how are we going to affect change? How are we going to bring this forward to having an effective campaign towards electing those people that will bring about that change for us? In other words, at which point are we going to then start occupying the ballot box? And, you know, I think that that's the next step. I'm not talking about on behalf of any political party itself. It's that we need to then take that one next step. And some of us old guys are, you know, standing back, letting the young bloods do the work. We've been there, we've done that, we know some of the things. If asked, you know, we'll come in and help. We just don't want to co-opt. And there's been cases in which some groups tried to co-opt in some of these cities where there were gatherings, and the reaction was, wait a minute, that's not what we wanted to do. You see, we wanted this to be an expression of our grievances and how we're not here to elect somebody at this point. But then you've got to make that transition eventually. In a revolutionary, as a historian, you go through a number of stages. You can never predict what's going to happen. There's a number of waves and currents and undercurrents throughout the whole political process. But at one time, then you've got to go for the power. And you cannot, and that's one thing that liberals usually somehow are, you know, they don't like the word, you know, go for the power. But without, you know, if you don't hold that power, then you cannot make the changes.
You know,
so,
I think there's,
you know.
Good point. Two other things I want to have you guys react to, because I think this is an interesting, in fact, could easily develop into one of these undercurrents in that shift from a stating of grievances to direct action. Two things I want to bring to your attention. Thing one is, you know, we have to thank the Iraqi legislature for saying no. They said, no, we can't have a free pass. We will no longer murder with impunity in the streets of Baghdad. And they have said, no, we won't have this immunity. So the official word is that those troops are going to be coming home. Now, when these troops come home to no jobs and foreclosed homes, that's going to be an interesting dynamic if that actually happens. And if it doesn't, that also will be a cause of dramatic action. The other thing I want you to weigh in on, folks, is I've heard some stories about the desire to see this Occupy movement transform into a convention in the summer. And if that happens, if there's a national gathering, I think that really could key into the whole summer convention season, and we might see the occupiers come to occupy the conventions. Any thoughts on those two points, folks? Let me go ahead and start with Gwen.
Well, first of all, I think that what's being overlooked here, Rick, is the fact that this is not just a national movement. For the first time since perhaps World War II, America is inspiring the world. We did that yesterday. Did anybody see that happen all over the world?
Yeah.
Everybody was occupying. From an idea that came out of basically Adbusters and Anonymous and WikiLeaks. This is a larger thing. It's about people's needs over corporate greed. And many of the people that while working within their countries and you know, knowing that this will have political effect eventually, it's a movement that is trying to be established, I think, basically as a global movement to say enough war, enough from that point of view. So the co-opting is meeting with some rather, you know, abrupt, you know, halt. Because the politic is being said, we're not about politics at Fukati Park anyways, and through many of the Occupy movements here and abroad. And, you know, the only place, Rick, that I saw that there was huge violence was actually Milan and Rome in Italy. They're very emotional.
How about you, Luis?
Yes, it's interesting that you brought up the issue of the troops coming home and then finding no jobs. You know, right after the war in Korea, thousands of soldiers came back home, and not only were they finding themselves with, you know, making the shift to life, but particularly the black troops, the black soldiers, came home to, well, yeah, you're going out there to fight for freedom and for liberty and rights, but you don't have any here. But, you know, see, and that happened with Vietnam, too. But when these soldiers came back home, they had been trained. I mean, and I've seen this again, you know, as a historian, it happened in the Civil War. Once you have unleashed this, once you know, these men were not going to take it back. They were not going to stand back. They were not going to, kowtow and say we have no rights. They were ready to stand up for their rights, and they did. That was a big change. Now we have a youth that is looking at what is going on, all these huge loans, student loans that they're coming out with. The idea that somebody is telling them, like the governor of Florida, well, you just can't choose your major. It's got to be something that is practical to us. And they're saying, wait, no, you can't do that. You know, you just can't go there anymore. There is an awakening, and I mean, it's like an incredible great awakening of the American citizen that is realizing that after this long nightmare that we've been coming out of those Bush 8 years, you know, and all these transitions that we have been going through, that finally there is a moment in which people are saying, no more. You know, in 2006, in the election of 2006, after it, the people said, we've been had. After 2008, people said, we were punked. And now, 2011, people are saying, we've had it. You see, I think that that's what's happening now.
How about you, Jimmy?
Well, on the particular issue of the troops coming back from the war, I think your analysis is right on, Rick. I think that turn on the ground in Iraq could really put into motion something significant. And if we really do, I mean, I would love to see the green zone emptied out over there, you know, and all the bases pulled out. But we'll see what happens. But if we get a wave of young vets coming back, and, you know, we're already seeing, I'm sure you guys have seen some of the photos and video of the young veterans turning up at Occupy Wall Street. The sign that's, I've seen a photograph bounced all over Facebook, for example, of the two guys with the sign that says, second time I fought for my country, first time I knew my enemy. So there is a real, what I call a revolutionary class consciousness that is, yes, being awakened. You know, that's what the name that I would give to the beast that's awake is the American working class, and the illusion of the middle class as somehow distinct from you know, working folks is sort of being collapsed. So I think if we get these young troops coming back, I'm hoping that, you know, the ones that are really wanting to and are able to organize and focus their energy are going to join groups like Iraq Veterans Against the War. And given the economic reality of the situation they're facing, again, I think you're right on, Rick, we're going to see something like a combination of Veterans for Peace, Vietnam Veterans Against the War in the 70s, plus the Bonus Army, you know, of the post-World War I era, where there's going to be an analysis against imperialism and an analysis against the class war that the 1% is waging every day on the rest of us, and that is kind of nakedly exposed now. And the other thing on the point about a national convention, I would love to see that. I think that's a great idea. I haven't heard anything here in our little neck of the woods specifically about that, but I will tell you that I've been involved with folks from a variety of different organizing perspectives and logistical angles on organizing to, you know, take the fight directly to the political conventions, especially the Republican National Convention, which, as Floridians, we really need to be getting involved and joining groups and and organizing a mass movement because we've got the Republicans coming to Tampa in August of 2012. There's already a working group that's been working for over a year in the Tampa Bay area to try to build some infrastructure. Those folks need all the help they can get. So, you know, start reaching out through all the organizations that you're part of, or form a local working group, an ad hoc group, to start getting people mobilized from your area to go to Tampa and participate in these demonstrations. Obviously, I'm sure there will be some mobilization by labor. I know that the national group, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, is going to do a Poor People's March. So there's really exciting things that we can do right here in our neck of the woods. You know, I hope we get folks to, if there is a national gathering of some sort from the occupation movement, and then bring that back home specifically to challenge the Republicans in the streets of Tampa. I want to say that to me, what I think is really important about the occupation movement is that it is a direct action-oriented movement. As a grassroots organizer for 20 years now, I've always tended to shy away from the electoral politics. I don't have any faith in that process, and I think a lot more people are into that kind of place in their political consciousness. And what's really exciting to me is some of the things that I'm hearing when I'm mixing it up and talking to folks down at the local occupation here in Gainesville about the decoupling of labor from the Democratic Party. You know, one of the very cohesive and coherent demands of this movement is getting corporate political money out of the system, getting corporate money out of our electoral and political system. And along with that, I think legislatively, when that happens eventually, it's gonna mean the unions will probably be barred from pouring money into elections. And frankly, in a way, I kind of think that'll be a good thing. I think there's going to be a sort of a voluntary element that's already happening where labor is starting to pull back from the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
And from the Republicans, too, where labor puts money behind them and say, you know what, to hell with these guys. I've heard some exciting stories about labor folks in New Jersey that have already been doing this for the last election cycle. They're putting their money, when it goes to elections, into candidates who are union people, regardless of party affiliation, that are standing up and saying, I am a union man or a union woman, and I'm going to work for working people if I get elected.
We've only
and
got
beyond
people.
That, I just want to say one last thing. Which,
sure, go ahead.
Yeah, just, you know, let's put that money, our union money, into organizing workers, and let's really take the fight to the 1%. That's where we have the most power, is on the job.
Well, we've only got 2.5 minutes left, so I just want to ask one more thing. It seems to me that with all of the mobilization we're seeing across the country, it's only going to get people better trained to resist, better trained to mobilize. This is mobilization 101. These people are being trained. So whether it's the next war they're trying to start in Africa, or they actually push through this terrible pipeline, people are up. And they're not going to come back down until something constructive happens. Any final comments, folks? Gwen?
I would say that basically what we've got going on is a brand new culture is forming right now. And it's not only young people, it's like Luis and Jim, myself, and you, and it has a lot to do, too, with a brand new form of media. You remember Gonzo Journalism and the Rolling Stone was born
sure
out
do.
Of another country.
Thanks
yeah.
very much, Gwen. Luis, quickly?
Yes, there's one thing that's one group I want, you know, if you all can focus on, is the Liberty Tree Foundation. It's over in Wisconsin. Ben Mansky is a founder. With him is David Cobb, who is working with the movement to amend to get corporate money out of the political system. But Liberty Tree has been working on a global wave of resistance. Yeah, and so I think that, you know, check them out.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for this very enlightening discussion of media today. And those of you who are out there making media, my friends, please keep it up. We really need you. Thanks so much for Progressive News Network. Thanks on behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, and myself, Rick Spezak. And thank you, my friends. We'll be talking to you again soon. Remember, there's a better world coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay, take care.
Good night, Rick.
Good night, all.
Good night. Good
night, all.
It's a better world coming, friends, when we build it. I also want to thank our friends from Newsstand Media, Plan. You people are excellent. Keep up the good work. We need your efforts alongside all of us. Newsstand Media, an important resource for today and for tomorrow. Thanks so much. On behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, and myself, Rick Spezak, I want to make sure to thank you for joining us and hope you'll tune in again next week. Rick Spezak, signing off.